The Equity Foundation is the professional development arm of MIA Equity and Equity New Zealand. Each year, the Equity Foundation delivers more than 100 masterclasses, workshops, film screenings, In Conversations, international scholarships and on-set internships free of charge for Equity members. We give our thanks to our principal sponsor, Media Super.
Good morning. As you know, I'm Alex Jones, so welcome to today's Equity Foundation live stream. I've got the pleasure in introducing our special guests, Ildiko Shushani and Claire Chihambakwe. Before we commence, I would like to acknowledge the Gadigal people of the Eora Nations and pay my respects to all the traditional owners of country and all throughout our country, and recognise their continuing connection to land, waters and culture, and that this always was and always will be Aboriginal land. And we pay our respects to elders past and present. As always, I want to take a minute to thank the Equity Foundation's principal sponsor, Media Super. Media Super has supported the foundation since our beginning in the early 2000s. They are your industry super fund and they can help you with your superannuation and provide you with financial advice. And they're fully equipped to assist you with this, and they have an understanding of the creative career, and so they really can work with you. So ask me if you don't have a contact details, or alternatively look on their website. Okay, so time to welcome Ildiko and Claire.
Hey,
Alex. Hi, Ildiko. Hello. Thank you so much for coming along and talking to everyone today.
Yes, thank you.
You've had such an incredibly varied career to date. And so I know there's a lot of people here from all over Australia and New Zealand who are interested in different aspects of your career. So we're excited to chat.
Yeah, thank you. I'm excited to see so many new faces and some familiar names in the group. So yeah, it's great.
Awesome. So just a quick little bit of a background about you. So you're an Australian of Japanese and heritage, Hungarian heritage. You're a graduate from the University of Southern Queensland, and you went on to have a successful acting career in Brisbane, Melbourne, and Sydney. But then you're also a filmmaker who wrote, produced, directed, and starred in your debut feature film, Marley Someone, which had an extremely successful run on the festival circuit. And then you decided to move to Canada.
Yep.
What motivated the move?
I think at the time, you know, I was getting to a point where I was like, feeling, especially at the time in Australia, there wasn't a lot of film and TV work, particularly for people of color. So, you know, I'd only get like one or two auditions a year. And, you know, I do some theater shows, but I was starting to get to a point where I just wanted to see if I could find a more sustainable career. And I just decided, you know what, the closest thing to the States is Canada. You know, it's really easy for us in Australia to get a 2-year work visa if we're under the age of 35. And so I decided to give that a go. And now I'm a permanent resident here working. And I think, you know, I keep track of what's going on in Australia. I do think it's getting better. I think there is a lot more work, particularly for diverse people. And there's a lot of exciting things there. But at the time I was ready for a move.
And so I saw that your movie, Marley Someone, had some success in Canada. So did that help as mm-hmm. well, that transition?
I think so. You know, I shot it in Australia and I was really grateful for the crew and the actors that we had on that. We had a really great team. So we did a festival run in Sydney and then we did a lot of the post-production in Canada because basically I shot it, moved to Canada and then had to kind of create new networks in Canada to, you know, get us over the line. And so I think that helped us as well with a Canadian festival run.
Yeah, absolutely. And so what is it like in Canada? You're in Vancouver.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so what was the transition like? How did you set yourself up there, and how did you get the acting agent that you've got now that I've read in other interviews with you that you're really happy with?
Yes, I love my agent here. She's amazing. I'm with their Characters Talent Agency. Basically I moved to Vancouver because I heard that it was just a really great way to start out as an actor in Canada. They shoot a lot of US productions up here, particularly at the time they were doing a lot of the DC TV shows like Supergirl and Legends of Tomorrow. So there was a lot of guest cast roles, a lot of recurring characters coming through every episode. So it's a great place to start. I knew a couple of Australian actors who had moved here a couple of years before me, so they were very helpful in giving me advice on, you know, where to get work, how to get my permanent residency, you know, who the best agents were. So thankfully there was that support network, and I've tried to pay that forward to any Australian actors that I know who have come in after me. So I think, yeah, there's a great little community of people kind of helping each other out and helping each other to sort of settle here and get a good foundation.
Amazing. And how about the culture of working in Canada in the industry versus what you experienced in Australia? How would you compare those?
Yeah, I didn't do a lot of film and TV in Australia, I have to admit. I did more theater, which I really loved. I enjoyed the culture of theater here and the idea that we kind of, you know, work together and there's a lot of camaraderie and we're making art and, you know, all of that, which I really love. I think here, film and TV, it's a business, it's a service industry here. So a lot of the Canadian crew are just, you know, an American show comes to shoot up here because of the tax credits. And so, you know, a lot of people here are, you know, in the AD department, props, set deck, transport, locations. And then a lot of actors, obviously, you know, can get their guest star roles or their recurring principal actor roles, things like that. So, yeah, it's fast paced. It sometimes, you know, if I'm being honest, like it can be what you expect from a toxic kind of Hollywood, you know, fast paced set. But there definitely are pathways to move forward. You know, I started out, I came here, I got my agent, I was doing auditions, and then I started as a production assistant. I became a line producer's assistant and then a script coordinator, and then I got my first writing gig. So it can be tough, and it can be a tricky pathway, but there are opportunities here.
Amazing. And because you mentioned it, your transition into writing, how much writing had you done before you moved? Like, obviously you wrote your feature, Marley Someone, but how much writing had you done before that? And had you done a course? Had you done any kind of formal, you know, training in writing?
Thankfully my drama school really kind of encouraged us to write our own work and create our own work and not sort of sit by the phone. So as actors, so we came out having, you know, written and created short films together and devised theater productions and things like that. So that gave me a good foundation. You know, I think when I first came out, I wrote a short play that was shortlisted in like Queensland Theatre Company's Young Playwrights Program. I put that on in Brisbane and Sydney. I did my film. So I was always, you know, trying to create work for myself in that kind of indie sphere. But I didn't have any sort of set qualifications or accreditations as a writer. And then when I came to Canada and wanted to work more in film and TV, you know, I used all of my work on set to try and observe how everything was run, how the directors worked, how the writers on set worked, how the showrunners worked. And then when I worked in the production office, there was a whole new level of understanding how a show comes together. And then it was really when I became a script coordinator that you really work with the writers, you work with the showrunner, you see how the writer's room operates. And thankfully it was a very supportive set, a supportive group of people, very encouraging. So I was able to pitch and show what I could do and, you know, give feedback on scripts and things like that. So yeah, that's kind of how I've sort of learnt on the job.
Fantastic. That's so cool. And I mean, and as you spoke about, just keeping your eyes open, keeping your ears open, learning, asking questions, I assume, when you're in those positions and, you know, people seeing that you're, you know, committed to what you're doing and, giving you those opportunities. So now at the moment you're a staff writer on Netflix Virgin River.
Yeah.
Amazing. What an amazing position to have. So what does a typical day look like as a writer? It's a full-time gig, I would imagine.
Yeah, it's full-time. So our seasons run so far have been either 10 or 12 episodes. And basically, in terms of how the room operates, we work 10 o'clock to 5 p.m. With a lunch break in between. And usually the first couple of weeks, you're kind of blue skying the season and you're kind of going, okay, where did last season end off? Our show has a lot of cliffhangers. So, you know, we kind of go, where did every character end up? Where do we want to take them at the end of this season? And we just sort of spitball ideas, like anything goes basically. And then as the weeks progress, we sort of start to hone in, okay, well, let's focus on episode one, you know, what's going to happen in this for this character? What are our ABC, whatever stories? And then the showrunner will assign script assignments. So usually the showrunner will do the first episode. And then as we progress, they might go, okay, Ildiko, you're writing this episode. And everyone's like, yeah, this is great. And we just kind of keep rolling through until we kind of get to the end. And then, you know, when we get into prep, when we get into production, when we get into the edit, you know, it's all rewriting as we go.
And how many people are in the room?
We have seven writers, but two are writing teams, so it's nine people.
And when you say that particular people are going to write an episode, like I know that you're credited in writing one of the episodes in season five, is that right?
Yes, and I just finished shooting my episode for season six, so it's not on IMDb yet, but it will be.
And so obviously you work together to spitball the ideas and stuff like that, but then someone is dedicated to writing an episode. But so do you mm-hmm. do that solo or do you still do that as a team, but you're doing the final kind of?
Yeah, it's a bit of both. So we usually break the story as a writer's room and we'll usually write the story area as a team. And once that gets approved by the network, I would go off and I'd write the outline basically. And it's broken down quite well that basically by that point, like I'm very well supported. It's not just me going on my own, having to figure it all out. And, you know, thankfully we've got our showrunner who's an executive producer. We've got a couple of other writer producers. So there definitely is a hierarchy and there is a support network there, especially for me. I'm kind of the junior writer in the team as a staff writer. So I go off, I get a few days to write the outline that goes to the exec producers, they approve it, that goes to the network, we get their approval, and then I'm off to writing the script. And then I've already got a really great roadmap for that, and then we go through that whole approval process again. So there's a lot of checks and balances, and you never really feel totally alone. You know, you've always got people that you can talk to and brainstorm, and if there's a problem somewhere, you know, we can work together and fix it.
Amazing. That's so cool. And so just with, so obviously Virgin River is a Netflix show, but mm-hmm. are Netflix, are you working for a producer that is then working for Netflix, or are you working directly with Netflix? Because as I think we've heard that Netflix is pretty hands-off and mm-hmm. allows people to go ahead and make what they.
Yeah. Yeah, we're pretty lucky. I think, you know, our producers, our Netflix producers who are part of our production are really great. They're super supportive. They're very smart. Yeah, they're pretty hands-off. So at the end of the day, you know, it is up to us as the creative and the showrunner, you know, but they do give their feedback on the scripts and the approvals and things like that. So we are always listening to what they think and what they're contributing. And then it's our showrunner who's our head writer, exec producer, who really makes the final calls on everything. So you can definitely have debates in the room or get notes from the network. And, you know, sometimes it's the note under the note. So they might give a note and we go, oh, okay, we see where they're coming from. They want, you know, this character to go in this direction. We don't quite feel like their example is what we want to go with. So we're going to try this. And then, you know, we discuss it with them and they, you know, if they give it a go ahead, you know, we go off in that direction. So yeah, there's a lot of collaboration and a lot of discussion. But yeah, they're great. Like I've had a very good experience with the people we have for our Netflix producers.
Awesome. Now you mentioned just before that you've been in production on one of your episodes for season six. So do you want to tell us a little bit about that? So once the script is done, then how much input does the writing team have, and are you on set? Do you have anything to do with casting, like things like that? How are you integrated past writing that script?
I think it's really great because I'm in Canada and everyone else is in LA based. Usually, like, I think with the new WJ contracts, I think writer producers are now able to fly up and come up, which wouldn't really be me because I'm only a staff writer. But because I'm in Vancouver, I've been able to go to set for both my episodes, which are great. So in all the prep meetings, I'm there. I obviously defer to the showrunner, but I'm also given the sort of the agency to be able to put in my input for anything that's sort of a creative or writer question. So again, it's a discussion. We're talking with the directors who are obviously coming in to shoot our blocks of episodes. And then you're on set, you're watching the monitors and, you know, talking with the cast, talking with the director, talking with the crew. It's a really good team on Virgin River. I feel very grateful that we have, you know, I don't want to be too cheesy and be like, we're like a family, but it is a very good working environment that people are quite respectful and they get along, and it's a really nice place to be.
Amazing. That's so cool. I love that you, especially coming from that acting background, that you're still there amongst it. You know, I mean, I think there's other industries or sectors where if you moved into a different part of the industry, you wouldn't necessarily have that kind of connection and relationship with where you've come from and still are in, because we mustn't forget that you're still an actor. This is what you're doing at the moment. That's so cool.
And the acting definitely helps. Like, I do feel like the acting informs the writing informs the acting. I think having my set experience and having the actor experience really helps me as a writer and a producer on set, because I can, you know, watch what's going on the monitors and say like, oh, you know, I feel like this actor just missed this one beat. We just want to get this because, you know, she's coming from this place and we want to get her to here. And you can have those great conversations, or there might be something where I go, oh, I need to talk to props about this thing, and, you know, feeling comfortable and understanding how the machine works to be able to know who to speak to and, you know, how to get the best that you can from every episode, every scene, you know?
Yeah, I'm noticing a pattern of you being in a place and observing and absorbing information and techniques and stuff like that and building those relationships. I guess when we're talking about relationships, obviously you mentioned before that you were able to move into one role and then that helped you get into another role. So how important is it, especially moving into a new country and a new area within the industry, how important is that to foster those relationships, and what kind of advice would you give to people that were needing to try and break into a new area of the industry?
Yeah, I mean, I can only talk from my experience. Like, I came here and, you know, I didn't have an uncle who was a producer who could get me a job, but, you know, I was lucky that I did have my actor networks that I knew in Australia who had come before me. So I could, you know, learn from them. My personal journey was I started as a production assistant, which isn't for everyone, because it can be quite a tough and sometimes demeaning or demoralizing job with the things you have to do or sometimes how you're treated. So
that kind of like being a personal assistant, is that?
It's like the people on set who are sort of in some ways like an entry level position who work for the locations department, you know, they're taking out the trash, they're cleaning up, you know, whatever needs to be on the location, they're locking up the shots, so they're calling out, making sure that someone's not walking into set, or they're sometimes handling the public just to go like, hey, can you please like not walk into this shot? We're just, you know, it's going to be 30 more seconds. And sometimes those people are disgruntled, and so you get yelled at for that. And, you know, so there's a lot going on. And they're very long hours. You're usually working like a base 15-hour day. Like, I worked on some shows where I looked at my paycheck and I'd worked a 100-hour week, you know, and that was pretty normal. So it is, you know, it can be very tough and stressful. And you don't get a lot of sleep sometimes, but I did find it was a really great way for me, at least starting out, to really see how everything worked. And I think because I'd like to think I had a very good attitude, I worked really hard, I had a good work ethic, that people saw that. And so, you know, I, on some shows, like, I didn't get invited to join like the AD department, I got invited to join just to train as a camera person. So It is a great way in, because I think if you have a good attitude and you work hard, people do notice that and they do want to sort of bring you up in their departments. So it was really good for me in that way, because yeah, I think I got noticed on one show, and that's what got me the producer's assistant gig, and that got me the script coordinator job. So I think it's starting out and working hard, making those connections, and just letting people know where you want to go. And if they're hopefully good people, they try and help you.
Wow, amazing. And on that, do you think in your future that you would like to look at a little bit more directing?
Yes, I think at some point. I think I feel more comfortable directing my own projects at this point. I don't feel like I have all the technical skills that I would like to have for a director, but I guess that's also why you work with a DP, like a cinematographer, because, you know, they're going to be the expert on all the camera lenses and the jib arms and the Scorpio heads and all of those things that I don't, you know, I can say like, I want to, you know, have the vibe of this in the scene, and we have to get this moment between the actors, and I can talk in that kind of way, but I can't really talk in a, we need this lens and then the drone shot comes in and then we pan over here, you know? So I don't feel quite ready to direct any sort of big budget productions.
But you did direct Marley Someone?
Yes, I did. I had a very good team, a very good DP. So yeah, I was very happy with the results.
Could you tell us a little bit more about that process? Because obviously that's a pretty big deal. Writing, directing, starring in your own feature, like that's amazing.
Yeah, it was a lot. Some of it was you know, doing it out of kind of necessity, and it was a story that was very close to me. It was kind of loosely based on my experiences as, you know, a woman of color and an actor trying to find my voice and my agency in this industry. And so for me, you know, I had a little bit of money, and I was very inspired by like Greta Gerwig and the mumblecore movement. So I was just like, how can I make this little bit of money stretch out to make a no budget feature film? And so I knew cast, like, because I was an actor, I got very excellent cast who were friends who kind of did favors or wanted something for their show reel. So we had that sort of mutual thing happening there. We got crew that were basically mostly like recent grads from the film schools who were also trying to, you know, get their first, you know, big project. So we kind of did it that way. We used some of the theater companies for locations and things like that. So it was definitely like asking favors, you know, making sure we had our limited liability insurance, making sure we, you know, had any location permits. Sometimes we did a little bit of guerrilla filmmaking where you run somewhere, set up the shot and hope you can disappear before you get in trouble. So yeah, it was a personal story. So it was like important for me to tell it the way I wanted to tell it. And yeah, I spoke with Sawyer Cat, nice. just having those conversations with the DP and saying, you know, like my skill set is not in the technical side of camera and lighting. So I'm going to definitely defer to you and trust you in that. I'm going to explain to you, you know, what I need to get out of this scene. And we did a lot of rehearsals with the cast so that they felt really comfortable. We shot it pretty simply in a lot of ways, you know, a lot of like that classic mumblecore, like a or indie, where it's just like a wide two shot and you're really just getting those moments between the actors. But yeah, Ben was a great DP, and yeah, he did an awesome job and would sometimes just be like, well, what if we did this? And, you know, I'm like, great, let's do it. Let's give it a shot.
Oh, that's so good. And I hope that inspires some people that are on the Zoom now to just like, just do it. We've all got ideas and we've all got thoughts about, oh, I could do this or I could do that. But you went and did it, which is really exciting. And it's obviously helped in the many different areas that you've now found yourself.
And I'll just add as well, just for everyone, just as, you know, if it's encouraging or not, but yeah, even if you're making like a short film, you know, what I found coming to Canada, it was such a great calling card, you know, it did pique people's interest. Like I had sometimes, you know, showrunners even come up to me as a production assistant going, you know, like, what do you want to do with your career? You know, you're working so hard, like, where do you want to go? And I'd be like, oh, here's my little card of my film, you know, check it out online. And, you know, people would watch it and give feedback. And so I think it, you know, lots of people do have their films and things, but I do feel like it did set me apart from people who were just similar to the style of just waiting by the phone. It was just showing like, oh, here's someone who has initiative. Here's someone who's really giving it a go, you know, and let's see what we can do. Let's see where we can take her next. So it's great to have that as a calling card, that you're not just like, I want to be this. You're actually doing it, you know, and making it happen.
And I imagine, if jumping back to when you first got to Canada and looking for an agent, I imagine that that was something that was, you know, primary in securing that, the agent that you've got.
Yeah, it was definitely helpful. Like, my agent's great. I think I must have sent in some sort of a email with a reel, and I said I knew someone in casting who, you know, backed me as a, you know, as an actor. So she met with me, she looked at my work, and yeah, and it worked out really well, and I've never looked back. She's amazing. And I'll say as well to all the actors here, you know, things have probably changed a lot in Australia since I was last there, but when I was in Australia, like, I really struggled to get auditions. I would get maybe 2 auditions a year in Australia, for film and TV. And here, you know, it's almost like every week, you know. I had a quick scan back and at all the sort of audition tapes that I had to send through, and I think it was maybe like 40-ish, you know. So there's a lot of work here. It was very quiet last year because of the strike. That was my worst year since I've been here. But it was understandable. So yeah, there's definitely a lot of opportunities here. And I know some Australian actors are doing well. They've been on a couple of shows as like recurring roles. I was this close to like a supporting series regular role. So I was very disappointed not to get that one. But yeah, like, there's great opportunities here for actors, and a lot of the shows, particularly like some of the procedurals and things like that, they're always requiring, you know, new guest star roles every episode. So yeah, there's a lot of opportunities.
And so when, if you are an Australian actor in Canada that has that visa that you were talking about before, like the 2-year, there's no issue. Like you can just work in any of these jobs. That's good. That's what we want to know, isn't it?
Yeah. So there's some jobs that are maybe, like if you're working for like a Hallmark movie of the week, that's a bit lower budget and more, they're wanting more like quote unquote Canadians, I think, for their tax breaks. You might at that point need to be a Canadian permanent resident, and be a full member of the union here, which is UBCP ACTRA. But for most of the US stuff coming through, you're pretty fine to, you know, I was auditioning pretty constantly as on a work holiday visa. And that helped me get my union membership. So I think I did two, you know, actor or principal roles, and that got me into the union. So, everything is a process and everything takes time, but it is doable. And the other thing I'll say as well, if it's helpful for people, is that, yeah, if you come here, if you're under 35 and you can get here on a work holiday visa for 2 years, if you do decide to do something like a production assistant, you can do that for a year, and that will help you get your permanent residency. So within 2 years, you should be able to get PR and then be able to kind of stay here, and you get more opportunities.
Oh, thank you for mentioning that. Now, while we are talking about your acting, the acting side of it, you got to work with Hilary Swank.
Yes.
That's pretty exciting.
It was awesome. Yeah, definitely a career highlight for me, for sure.
Absolutely, absolutely. Do you want to tell us a little story about that, or a little anecdote?
Yeah, so I put in a tape, and I was just like really not feeling great about it. I was like, oh, I don't know, I just feel like I just said the lines, whatever. Didn't hear anything for ages. And then, you know, got the call from my agent. She's like, yeah, you got the part, great. And it was for the pilot of Alaska Daily, which is an ABC series. And yeah, Hilary Swank was the number one on the call sheet. And Tom McCarthy, who's directed like Spotlight, was the director producer on it. And it was amazing. And I came on for my day on set, and she was super lovely, like so humble, so kind. It was very, it was wonderful. And I just had my American accent the whole time. And so she thought I was from LA. And I was like, felt very like reassured, because I was like, okay, yes, good. Like, if Hilary Swank can't tell, then I'm in a good place here with my accent. And then I was like, no, I'm from Australia. And she's like, wow, I can usually tell, but I couldn't hear it in your accent. So I was like, whew. And we did a cool like walk and talk. They had this very big like crane shot through. The characters were like, we start off in the big New York, kind of like a New York Times office, big bullpen. And so we're doing a walk and talk, which is another weird career highlight for me because I've always wanted to do like a West Wing walk and talk scene. And we did that, and her character's a bit mean to me, and I'm not happy about it. So, yeah, but Hilary Swank was super lovely.
That's good. That's great. That's a really a nice thing to put on your board there.
Yeah.
And so how do you balance, now that you have this full-time gig writing for Virgin River, how do you balance your acting and you're now writing? So does your agent still send you auditions? Are you still self-taping, or how do you balance that?
Yeah, I'm still self-taping. You know, I think part of what happened with the strike as well was this idea that writers are kind of becoming more like gig workers in a way. So, you know, for The Room, I'm only working about 5 months of the year in the writer's room to get those 10 episodes out. And then I might be working maybe 6 weeks for prep to shooting. And then aside from that, I'm kind of a free agent. So I usually then focus back on acting, writing my own projects, you know, making sure I have my sample scripts ready and good to go. So yeah, I think it's similar to how we all are as actors, having to kind of, you know, juggle multiple balls to just, you know, sustain a career.
Yeah. Now you touched on the strike there. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that was something that affected you as a writer because it was the writer's strike. But do you want to just give us an overview of what it felt like being directly in that industry last year?
Yeah, it was tough. And I think it had a lot of trickle down effect on, you know, other crew and cast in Canada, you know, when SAG also went on strike. But I think, you know, like with any union movement, same with the MEAA, it's like, I think we're all working to just try and get the best that we can for the workers. And I do think that if we get those, you know, those, the things that we want, hopefully in our contracts, then that can kind of trickle down to the other departments and crew as well. So we started writing on Virgin River season 6 last year. I think we got 4 episodes out to the network. And then we went on strike. So it was pencils down. We were like, we're not coming back in tomorrow. Was hoping, you know, I was thinking it would be a couple of months. And then we started to go, oh, okay, might not be till, you know, Labor Day in the States. And then it kept going. And so it was tough because, you know, you couldn't work as a writer. So I think some writers, you know, maybe had to pick up other jobs. I flew down to LA just to support the cause for a week, and we were, you know, picketing outside of the studios. There was a lot of great morale, which was really good, and I think a lot of support from the public and from the media, which was great, which hasn't always happened in past writers' strikes. And then when SAG-AFTRA joined, I think that was a really like a strong show of solidarity among the two unions. I think the Teamsters really supported us. I think it was good in the sense that the solidarity was great, and I think we got some really great things in our deal, and hopefully, you know, we can keep getting more and more of the other things, particularly in relation to AI, which is obviously a new technology. We don't know where that's quite going to go. You know, me as a staff writer, I was happy with some of the things that we got for the entry level writers, but it would be great if we could also go to set. So yeah, I think you're always kind of working at it and negotiating and, you know, fighting for the best we can for the workers. And I hope that happens. I think IATSE here are maybe dealing with their kind of negotiations as well. So yeah, we're just seeing how it all goes. I think, to me personally, I feel like, you know, the networks and everything are just making more and more profits, and it would be nice to see that kind of filtered down to the people working on those shows.
Yeah, thank you. Did you use the time where you were pencils down to work on your own stuff, or did you work on things that you were hoping to pitch to network or producers, or is that something that is in your future?
Yeah, so we were allowed, as part of the WJ, we are allowed to work on our own projects as long as it's not something that's already, I think, like maybe already been optioned or already has, like, you know, a producer or something like that. Like, you can work on your own individual projects. So I did a little bit of my own writing and things like that, and I'm still, you know, working on the pilot episodes that I want to, you know, for shows I want to create and a play and things like that. So I think, you know, all writers are constantly, you know, writing and churning out more sample scripts, because, you know, if something gets passed on, you've got to have the next thing ready to go. And I think I'm hoping that soonish, like, I want to try and get a US literary agent, and I'm trying to get my O1 as a writer. So yeah, I think you're just, with everything, you're always, like, as an actor, you're always doing classes, you're always trying to, you know, keep up the craft. And it's the same with writing. The more you write, the better you get, hopefully.
And so are you looking in the future to, you just said you're looking at getting your O1 through writing. Are you looking to move to LA in the future? Or?
Yeah, if I can, that would be great, because since COVID, like, I think it was last season was the first season that they kind of went back in person. And so all the writers are down in LA working in the writer's room in person, and I'm the virtual person on a giant screen. I'm just like a head on the screen. So yeah, if I can get down, it would just be better, because it's just a bit easier communicating and everything. As we're all at one table, you know, talking and spitballing, it just makes it a bit easier to be there.
Oh gosh, we've covered a lot, haven't we?
I hope so. I hope it's been helpful for people.
So I guess we have sort of touched on it as we've gone through, but I think, you know, if there are people on this call that were looking to kind of not emulate what you've done, but to have a similar trajectory, like, you know, they're in Australia getting enough work, but know that they, you know, have capability for more, and maybe have their own ideas, they have their own concepts for their own work, or they just want more opportunity, I suppose. You've kind of touched on it, but what kind of tips, tricks, recommendations would you have for people?
Yeah, there's with everything in this industry, there's no set pathway. Like, I know some people go up the indie track, you know, they'll make a lot of their own theater shows or their short films or then a feature, and then eventually they might get Screen Australia funding, or their show gets picked up and they put it on at La Boite or Griffin or something like that. So there's that track. There's the track where, you know, your agent gets you work as an actor and you, you know, blow up in Hollywood, and that works out well, but it's kind of a bit more rare, which is unfortunate. Or you could try this route. If you want to go to LA and you can't get a visa to do that, it's a very viable option to get, if you're under 35. I'm not sure how it is to get a visa if you're over 35, but you can get your work holiday visa. You can work here. You can try it out. You can act. You can create your own work. There's a lot of programs here for once you become a permanent resident in Canada too. There's writers programs and things like that. Like, I was part of the Netflix Banff Diversity of Voices initiative, so I got to pitch a show at the Banff World Media Festival. I will be honest, like, it is very difficult to get creative writing work here in Vancouver, in Canada, because a lot of the US productions, you know, the writers' rooms are in LA, but it's not impossible. Like, I have done it. I know a couple of other people who have done it. There's a few more shows, Canadian shows, that are being written in Vancouver or over in Toronto. So it is possible, but I will be honest, like, it is very tricky to do the writing stuff, but definitely the acting stuff, there's a lot of opportunity here.
Amazing. And I'm going to ask one more question before I think we're going to go to some questions from our audience. What do you find more challenging, acting or writing?
Oh, that's a good one. I think they both have their challenges. I think for me, acting, like, especially coming from a theater background, like, I really love the rehearsal process in theater. I love having 4 weeks. I love really delving into the work with other cast. And so I do find it a bit challenging, you know, getting a 4 or 5 page audition the night before and then having to sort of break it down and feel good enough to you know, send it through at such short notice, because I want more time to be able to really delve into it. But that's when you have to, you know, fall back on your craft and on your instincts and just really commit to what you can give. And same with working on set, like, especially if you're kind of more of a day player role, you're just really kind of ushered in. It's very fast. It's very rushed. They're like, okay, go, here you are. Yep. Meet this person. Okay, great. Let's shoot it, you know? And so you can feel a little bit flustered at first or a little bit on the back foot. So I do find that challenging as an actor. And then for the writing, I think for my work, it's really just the rewriting process. And, you know, I think you have to, what I learned is, like, which I think we all, eventually all learn as writers, is that at first you're like, I want to break structure and I'm going to do it my way. But it's really important to actually understand structure and do all your brainstorming and outlining. And it actually, if you do, you know, 60% of the work at the beginning before you write a script, it's just going to make the script process so much easier and stronger. And then it's just the rewrite process that I also sometimes find challenging, going like, well, you got to kill your darlings, or, you know, I'm going to have to move that scene over here. And yeah, so there's challenges to both, for sure.
Wonderful. Well, congratulations. You really looks like and sounds like you've really made some amazing connections and obviously worked your way up and around and had some really awesome experiences both here and in Canada, and there's more to come. So we look forward to seeing what else is happening for you. Alex, anyone has any questions? I'm sure there are.
Yes, there are. There are a few questions. There's one question here about how important are relationships when you're breaking into the new areas, and sort of your personal qualities that you need to, because it can be a difficult industry. You mentioned that you were lucky enough to have a few contacts, but what if you're sort of going in cold? What are some of the things you can recommend for people?
Yeah, I think if you went in, like if you moved to Canada, for example, and you really knew no one, well, first, you will now know me. So that's a great start. There's also some like Facebook groups. If you are happy to start off in the production assistant track, there are Facebook groups like, I think it's called something like BC Crew Packs. And, you know, they always do call outs if they need an ASAP production assistant. And, you know, if you take that call and you go on to set, you get your first day, then sometimes you make those connections with the assistant locations manager and the key production assistants, who are like your supervisors. You can get more work that way and then start to build those connections. And as I said, I think if you have a good attitude and a good work ethic, you know, people want to work with people that they can get along with, who they also can trust will do the job. So that's really how best to kind of build those networks. There's also here the Directors Guild of Canada website usually has a production list, so you can go on there and have a look at what's shooting and what dates they're shooting, and then you can always shoot an email, you know, a nicely worded professional email to the locations manager, which I did as well when I first got here, with my resume, and I said, hi, you know, I'm looking for production assistant work, I'm available, I have a car. Usually they want you to have a car and a cell phone, and then if you're working in the office, they want you to have a laptop as well. But yeah, if you find those ways. I also joined, you know, other Facebook groups where they were, I think it was called Rain Dance, like they do events. And so there's lots of networking and film kind of events that you can find and start to meet people and have those conversations.
And do you have a crew agents like you do here, where you've got agents who look after crew? It sounds like you're freelancing a bit there.
Yeah, not that I'm aware of. I think maybe if you get higher up, like you're a costume designer, I know they have agents, but I don't, I could be wrong. I don't think that a lot of the average crew will have agents. It just becomes really, most of the time it's starting out as a PA and then making those connections and joining what departments you want with the people that you meet on the shows. And they usually bring their teams to the next show and things like that. So you can work pretty consistently.
So, how long have you been in Canada, and how long was your process? How long did it take you to do the full move from to Canada to be?
Yeah. So I moved to Canada April 2017. I did 2 months working as a production assistant and then 10 months as a key production assistant, which is just basically a like a supervisor PA on set. So I worked on set. And then from there, I got offered a job as a line producer's assistant. So I was a line producer's assistant for maybe 2 or 2.5 years. And then I got a script coordinator job on a movie. And then from that, I got the script coordinator job on Virgin River. And after one season, they gave me a freelance script to write. So I worked with the writer's room in season 5 and as a script and clearance coordinator. And then last year was my first staff writer, full-time writer's gig. And then throughout that, I was, every so often booking an actor gig here and there. So yeah, that was kind of the trajectory for me.
And obviously, you had to have the writing credits to be able to be considered, or would they have taken you on without that, without having done your first film?
I think it was more working as a support staff. So usually one of the tracks that you can do, which happens more in LA, is that maybe you finish film school, you get a job as either a writer's room PA, a writer's assistant, who is basically this assistant to the writer's room, or a script coordinator. And those roles get to work closely with the writer's room and see how the show is written and broken and made. And then from there, I think because I had an understanding of the show, I had an understanding of the characters, I was pitching ideas, I was working with the writers when they had notes and sort of being a sounding board for them. I think because I could show what I could do, they trusted me with a script and wanted to kind of, I guess, reward me with a script or however we want to call it. And then from that, I, you know, it made meant that I could work more with the room. I could prove what I could do as a writer. And then they were like, okay, great, you've really proved yourself now. You can be a staff writer. So it's that kind of slog of like, proving yourself every step of the way. And thankfully I worked in a very supportive environment that gave me that room to do that and to grow and to learn from what they did as well.
What does your creative process look like? How do you keep the creativity flowing and deal with creative blocks? Do you have techniques, tools that you fall back on?
Yeah, I think some of it is similar to things that I think we learn as actors as well, is that, I think one, it's great to have a life outside of the creative arts sometimes. I think we start to get very into that hustle culture of like every day we have to, do our warm-ups and do our acting class and then read a play and do the script and then write something and, and it can get very overwhelming. And I think a lot of understanding the human condition is also being a part of life and society. And so I think if you have hobbies or friendships or family outside of that, I think one, that's really helpful. I think for writing, if you have a story that you feel really passionate about and you believe in it and you really love the characters, then I think you just pursue it and you go for it and you find what connects with you. And then hopefully, that's going to connect with some audience, even if it's a niche audience. And if you feel like you've got a block, then, physically you could just go for a walk or play piano or listen to a podcast that might be relevant or watch a movie, go out with your friends, do something. Like sometimes just the act of going for a walk actually triggers those ideas, or even just having a nap, actually helps. It sounds silly, but these things actually do help because it just unlocks more of your subconscious mind. And then hopefully you come to something, or if not, you just write. Like it doesn't matter if it's crap, you do your vomit draft or you just write out the scene, however it comes out, and maybe you find gold, or maybe you realize what doesn't work with the scene and that gives you something. So I think always just doing something helps. It's like when you're learning a script and you you're washing the dishes, and it gives you, it unlocks something in the script that you maybe wouldn't have found just by sitting there, you know, reading it and rote learning it. So yeah, I think just try and shake things up usually helps.
And what about Vancouver's theatre scene? Have you had much experience with that, and how does it compare to Australia's?
Yeah, I think I haven't worked a lot in the Vancouver theatre scene. I think, no disrespect to it, I think it's a little bit smaller than what you would expect in like Sydney and Melbourne, for example. However, that said, there's like, it's a tight-knit community. My husband actually works in theater. He's a sound designer and a technical director. So he's had a very good career here. So there is work, definitely. They have a big festival every year called Bard on the Beach, which is basically like Shakespeare in the Park. And they'll do three main stage shows, which are awesome. Like last year they did As You Like It to the music of the Beatles. And my husband was their associate sound designer on that. They toured it to Washington, D.C. They've toured it to Calgary. I think they're planning some more tours. They do a lot of new Canadian works, which would be similar to what you might expect from the Griffin. There's Arts Club, which I guess is sort of like their big main stage company slash like more like something you'd expect to see at the Lyric Theater. So a lot of like the big musicals or the sort of big shows that are, you know, trying to reach a broader audience. So there's definitely stuff here if you want to do theater. I just think the film and TV industry is bigger here.
Okay, well, we've got something here, and I think it mentions here that you didn't initially have any formal screenwriting training, although you did work on it in your academic setting. But once you started getting the writing work, did you feel like you needed to have some of that more formal training, or did you feel like you needed to do any more work? Did you do any courses, reading, writing, etc.?
Yeah, I think yes and no. Like it definitely, as you know, sometimes when they say like a woman feels like she needs to be 100% qualified for a job before she'll go for it, I think sometimes there's a part of that part of me that's, you know, really likes having training and likes having, you know, that kind of education, that was like, oh, maybe I should do a master's in creative writing or screenwriting or something like that. But there's another part of me that's, you know, learned from the job and learned from the experience of the work. And so just trying to be a confident young go-getter, I've done some smaller like screenwriting short courses, and I've done like different pitching courses, and, you know, applied for different things where you get mentorship and things like that. So that I have had certain forms of training as a writer, just not a formal like tertiary education level. But I think, you know, at the moment I'm happy. I'm learning on the job. I have the job that, you know, a lot of film school, you know, screenwriters want. So I'm trying to just be confident in that and stay on this track while I can, while they still hire me.
Okay, I've got a question coming up, a question directly to you, Ildiko, from James.
Yes. Hi, James, how are you?
Hello, nice to see you.
I haven't seen you in so long.
It's been a very long time.
Thank you.
It's really exciting to hear about this career path you've managed to weave for yourself. It's really impressive. Well done.
Thank you. And congrats on your career.
Thank you. I was hoping to ask about your choice of city with Vancouver, and if you ever considered being on the East Coast, and if you feel like there's a difference in the type of work opportunities on those, you know, Toronto, Vancouver front. Is it a little bit like the Melbourne, Sydney choice?
I think a little bit. You know, I think Vancouver is a little bit Brisbane, Sydney, and I think Toronto is kind of more Melbourne in a way. Toronto and Montreal are kind of the more Melbourne cities, as I've heard. What I was advised when I first decided to move to Canada was that Vancouver's a bit easier to break into, particularly as an actor, because especially at the time, there was just so many shows, like all the DC shows were constantly hiring, you know, needed a new recurring for every, or new principal or new guest star for every episode. And there was some procedurals. I think I think Toronto is great. I've just what I've heard, like I've never worked there, but what I've heard is that it can be a little bit more sort of niche, and they've got their sort of more locked in community of people. So it can be a little bit harder to break in when you first get there. So I've also heard that some people might start in Vancouver and then get a few credits and things like that, and then transfer over to Toronto. There's a lot more writing work in Toronto, but it is Canadian shows. So you might need to wait till you get your PR before you can break in. And also, like, it can be a kind of a small, tight-knit thing to break into, but it's not impossible. And they also have, like, if you're doing comedy, they have the second city, Toronto. So I think a lot of comedians and things, you know, get their break doing stand-up and second city, and then they can get their show that way. But yeah, I think there's still a lot of work in Toronto. I've just heard that it can be harder to break into.
Okay. And second question, is there a way that we can watch your mumblecore masterpiece somehow?
It's not really out there for the public, but I can always send people a link if they're keen to watch.
Okay, I'll message you later. Thank you.
I'd love to. I was going to ask the same question.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm happy to share.
Thanks, James. Claire, I'll just send it back to you for any final comments.
Yes, I think Gail's got her hand up just for one last one.
Thank you so much, Ildiko. Thank you, and Claire, thank you very much. I'm just thinking from a writer's perspective. I've watched a bit of Virgin River, and it just seems so wholesome. So it's like you've got these really strict guidelines of, I know that there can be murders or attacks in a bar and all that kind of thing, but I just wonder, are you given a baseline of, like, Christianity? Are you given a baseline of Mills and Boone? And once you get that, has that been a stretch for you to actually alter your writing to be able to enhance what they're after?
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, I started on season 4. So when I started on the show, it's already been established, the tone of the show, the voice of the show, the characters. It's based on a very popular series of books by Robin Carr. So I think, you know, the showrunner who created it, Sue Tenney, you know, I don't know the full process there, but I think she had these books. She got the rights. She pitched it to Netflix. I think Netflix wanted a show that kind of had that broad, you know, broad audience, Americana, maybe, you know, focuses, you know, has a great audience for women 50 plus with some really great characters for them in the show. So I don't know the backstory in terms of what Netflix wanted. I think they just wanted a comfort show that was going to have a broad audience. And I think, you know, it was kind of smart because this show has blown up, I think, more than what people even initially thought it would be. But yes, I think, you know, I think we work within the tone and the style of the show. You know, sometimes we might try and stretch things or see how edgy we can get. But we, you know, we respect our audience. We love our audience. We've got a very strong fan base. So you don't want to tilt the boat too much because it's the show that it is and people love it for that. And I think it came out at a really good time during COVID because it was such a comfort watch at a time when people needed that. I think it's the same with like shows like Ted Lasso, you know, it's a gentle watch, and we've got the romance, got a little bit of crime, got a few saucy cliffhangers, you know, but yeah, you're definitely writing within that tone. And I think, you know, then as a writer, you might try and put in a little bit of your own personal voice, but at the end of the day, you've got to fit into the world that you're writing for.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Gail. Ildiko, thank you so much. You've been incredibly generous with your time and also the information that you've been able to share. So thank you so much. I know it's really appreciated, especially because the people we have on the call are from all different parts of the industry. So everybody, I'm sure, has a different part of it that they are most interested in. And I think we've covered it all quite well. I was just hoping that you could just leave us with just how it felt being on set and seeing something that you had written, that you had created, being produced with what I imagine is quite a decent budget and on a streaming service that goes globally. Like, how did that feel being there and sitting on your chair? I've seen
that. Yeah, it was definitely a pinch me moment. You know, it's very humbling and very exciting. You know, I think you always like dream that you're going to be there and you plan and you work for it and you go, you know, one day I'm going to do it. So to be able to do it is, it feels really good. I'm really happy. I'm proud of the work that we do, and I'm really grateful for the people that I'm working with. I really love working on this show, and, you know, not all shows are as set feelings as safe and respectful. So it's good to be on one where you feel, you know, well supported. And, you know, it means a lot that the show touches so many people's hearts as well. So that's encouraging. And yeah, I hope that there's been something that I've said today that has been helpful for people. I hope that it's inspiring people to go out and create their own work and maybe come to Canada and come say hi. You can find me on Instagram. I'll help you as much as I can.
That's so gorgeous. Thank you so much. And thanks everyone for joining us today.
And thank you, Claire, for doing such a wonderful job hosting this. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you.
And to Ildiko, I can imagine you are pretty busy. So you said yes instantly, and we are very grateful for you giving us our time today. So thank you so much. So to you and Claire, thank you to all who came today. Of course, Media Super, you know, we couldn't do this without. And good luck, and see you next time. Yeah. So much to everyone.
Thank you for having me. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks so much, Ildiko. All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast, brought to you by our principal sponsor, Media Super, and the Equity Foundation. For more information about the work we do, visit equityfoundation.org.au or follow Equity Foundation Australia on Facebook and Instagram.